Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
And we are live.
Hello.
So a huge, great big welcome to children's author and newly an agent, Jonathan Rosen.
Hi, thanks for having me. How are you?
How do you say welcome in Spanish? Bienvenido, bienvenido.
Bienvenido, yes.
Bienvenido en todos los patitos. I'm Mel Rosenberg, the host of the Children's Literature Channel for the New Books Network. And Jonathan, it's wonderful to have you on the program.
No, good. Thanks for having me. I was very thrilled.
Okay, so but this is how it works. I get to ask the questions.
Okay. Hopefully, I'll have some answers.
Okay. So how long? First of all, let's cut to the most recent thing. You've decided to become an agent. When did that happen?
It started happening probably at the end of last year, the end of 2021. I started talking to my agent, Nicole Resinetti, about, she was the head of the Seymour agency, about the possibility of my becoming an agent too, what her thoughts were about it. So she thought it'd be a fantastic idea. And so we started working on it, you know, learning behind the scenes ropes, learning the ropes and everything. And finally, you know, I started announcing, I guess, in around May. So, but I was learning a lot of things before then, you know, intensive training.
So we're now in November. This, by the way, is our Thanksgiving special. And so happy Thanksgiving to all our friends in America. Canadians celebrate Thanksgiving on another date. And I'm in Israel, so we really forget about it completely. So happy Thanksgiving. And we're going to talk about your Thanksgiving special, which is your wonderfully cuddly book about the night of the living cuddle bears that are not so cuddly.
Cuddle buddies, bunnies, yes.
You're also an author. So you're newly become an agent, and a lot of people who are listening to the show are going to wonder what you're looking for. I'm going to warn people that agents say no about 100,000 times more than they say yes. What are you looking for, Jonathan?
I'm really, for the most part, I'm wide open. I really am. I cover from everything from picture books up to adult thrillers, memoirs, and everything in between. So I'm really open to anything. It's just got to catch my eye. I keep saying I do love humor. So anything that's humorous, I have a soft spot for. And, and just really anything that sounds good, I'm interested. If it reflects my background, like I put in my little pitch there, I'm Jewish Mexican background. So if it has any of those things too, I'm really intrigued to start.
Okay, so the Cancun Passover. Okay, right. So let's start now at the beginning of Jonathan Rosen.
I was born in a little log cabin in Nebraska. I was born in Brooklyn.
One second, Jonathan, listen, we have to decide. There has to be like a safety word. So we go back to being serious, because if you pull me out on the humor, we're not going to say anything of import. We're going to have a lot of fun. The New Books Network is going to fire me. The Seymour Agency will not fire you.
I hope not.
Okay, so seriously. A little bit about you.
I was born in Brooklyn. I was born in Brooklyn, New York. I've lived in many different places, though. I've lived in Mexico for a couple of years. I've lived in Israel for a couple of years. And Florida, a few years when I was a teen, and now I'm back in Florida now.
Okay, where in Florida?
I'm down in Tamarack, Florida.
Okay, but you don't
want the southeast section.
You don't want authors coming and knocking on your door. Jonathan, do I have a manuscript for you?
Not again. Yes.
Okay, so you actually grew up in Brooklyn?
I grew up in Brooklyn. I'm a Brooklyn boy. Mm-hmm.
Because you tell everybody that you're Mexican, so come on.
Well, my father was Mexican. My father was Mexican Jewish, and I did live in Mexico for a couple of years. So I still have a lot of Mexican family. I love Mexico. I love visiting Mexico. So, yeah, it's a big part of my identity.
So your soft spot as an author is, I'm going to say, 8 to 14?
Probably. For now, I am on submission with my agent with an adult thriller, actually trying to diversify a little bit, I guess.
Trying to scare the crap out of her.
Yes. So
listen, here, I read your book, you know, the Night of the Living Cuddle Bunnies, and yes. I nearly peed in my pants and I couldn't sleep that night.
Well, hopefully you laughed as well.
I did. Yes. I did. Let's go back. So I have a theory, and my theory says that we write to the period that we're stuck at as human beings. So I write picture books that sticks me at the age of 5. What age are you stuck at?
That probably is a good, those were very good years. That's those 8 to 14 years were very good years. I enjoyed those quite a bit. So that's probably where my sensibilities lie. And probably my mind is probably stuck there. I had a lot of good memories, good friends, and good times.
Okay. Usually it's especially people like you who also write thrillers, a lot of angst, but you don't have the angst. You just have the fun.
Not that I project, but inwardly, we don't know. Inwardly, there might be different than the outwardly. But I do like to have a lot of fun with it. And it's that sense of wonder. I think to me, middle grade is that really great sense of wonder that you're discovering a lot of things and everything's still possibility of being magical. You're not jaded yet.
Okay. And what did you study? How did you become a writer?
I was always writing. All through my youth, I was always writing. I was writing, always writing stories. If I didn't like the endings of movies, I rewrote the endings. That was one of the first things that I did, actually, rewriting the ending of a Godzilla movie that I didn't like. But I was always writing. And it was in high school when one of my teachers, Mrs. Burney, she pulled me aside after class and told me that I had a knack for that. And that's really the first time that it really resonated with me, because, you know, your parents are supposed to tell you you're good. It doesn't mean if it's true or not, but they say, oh, this is wonderful. But yes, they're supposed to tell you that if they're good parents. But this was the first time someone else on the...
Well, one second, hold on. Are your parents good parents?
I feel like I should lie on the couch now and talk to you about this. No, yes, my parents were good. I had a nice childhood. My parents were always good.
Oh, how upsetting to me. So you had a normal, wonderful childhood, and you still became a writer. Oh,
yeah. Well, the writing's part of the other thing. The writing has always been an escape from other issues of life. So yeah, you can lose yourself in writing.
Oh, so now it's getting interesting. So what are you losing, Jonathan?
Well, you see, I always tell people this: you cannot control things that are going on outwardly in your life necessarily, but I can control what's on the page. So there, I'm God. I can do whatever I want to happen, can happen.
You're God and Godzilla. So there was some angst, but if you don't want to take us there, we don't have to go.
There are always things going on in anyone's life, and writing is always a great escape.
And did you have a bar mitzvah?
I did. I had my bar mitzvah in Israel. I had my bar mitzvah at the wall.
You didn't invite me.
You might have been here at the time. So I had my bar mitzvah at the wall, and we were living in Israel at the time. And I moved from Israel probably 2 weeks after my bar mitzvah. We moved back to the States.
Okay, so you spent, So part of your childhood actually you spent here in Israel.
Yeah. The 11 and 13, between 11 and 13, I was in Israel.
That's a sufficient reason to write.
Yes.
In and of itself. Yeah. And so what happened in high school and what did you study at the college?
I moved around a lot. I like to tell people it's, you know, my father was on the run, but no, it's we moved around. I was in New York for several years. Then I came to Florida, in St. Pete, Florida. And then this I can get angry with my parents about. My parents moved us back to New York on my senior year of high school. So I spent the first 3 years in one place, and then senior year, when you don't know anyone, when you're supposed to be enjoying your life, then we moved again. And so I was a new kid back in New York in high school. But we did move around quite a bit when I was younger.
Uh-huh. Okay, so we're getting a little closer now to the core. So you're back in your senior year in high school, back in New York. And then what happened?
Then I went to college in New York and worked
studied
in New York.
What?
I studied English. I studied English. I did take some theater classes too. It was a time that I was considering really going to theater, but for the most part, I took English classes and started thinking about writing then, perhaps.
You didn't have any pressure.
More than
you didn't have any pressure from the folks, like Jonathan. What kind of geschäft is this for a?
Well, that's why. That's why I went out of theater from the pressure from the folks. So yes.
Okay, and then what happened?
So yeah, no, just started writing, and I went into several careers that had nothing to do with writing, but. Of course, but each career and each, you know, stop helps make you the person that you are, and, you know, helps cement your identity a little bit too. Builds and, what and you learn.
Maybe you made enough money so you could go back to writing.
Well, yeah, I wanted to get into the lucrative world of Kidlit.
Okay, that was in jest, folks. People are going to take it seriously now.
Yes.
Kidlit is lucrative in the sense that you pay money.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so take us to your shift, because now, you know, you're an agent and you've written several books. What happened?
I've enjoyed writing. I do enjoy writing quite a bit. Like I said, you know, it is a place to lose myself, and you don't go into it for the money. That's for sure. You don't go into it for that. But look, you never know, but I like the stories. Every author should like their stories. I do like the stories. I do like creating that content. I love the idea that kids have read my book out there and that have enjoyed my book. So I do enjoy, I do get a lot of satisfaction out of that. And yeah, I like writing, and I'm able to contribute to somehow. And this past year we did, you're probably going to bring it up. We did a Jewish anthology. And I'm really proud of that one. And, you know, a time with such terrible rising anti-Semitism, it's was one of the things that I'm passionate about, and to get Jewish stories out.
Yeah, we're going to get there. But let's let's talk first about the cuddle bunnies that aren't very cuddly.
Well, I love.
Also tell us how you found an agent, how you wrote the story. Frightening stories for old Jewish men? So, come on.
So one thing at a time. Okay, so I started taking writing, getting back to writing. I started getting serious about writing, I'll say 2008, 2009, right around then. I started, you know, I was doing other things. I was, you know, I was teaching also. I worked day trading for a bit. I was a teacher as well. And that's when I started really getting into serious back in writing again. Started learning, reading everything about writing, reading a lot of books, going to conferences. And I got an agent, lost an agent. And I figured, okay, I got an agent. This should be easy. And it took many years again between agents. I kept working. I kept working at it. And when, you know, the eureka, the moment that someone says, you know, an agent accepts you and wants to represent your work, it was a great feeling that it resonated with, you know, someone else. And
were you acquiring the Cuddle Bunny
it was the Cuddle Bunny's book. I got the first agent I got taken on someone else and with a different story, and that story is still out there. It never sold, but I got there. I still love that story. But yeah, so it's, you hear this all the time. Cuddle Bunnies is my first real book published, but it's the fourth book that I wrote. So it's, right. You know, you have others in between.
Jonathan, I have to intercede a second. You have something special because only one in, I'm going to say 1,000, but it's less, writers finds an agent. Those are the statistics. Those are my statistics.
Those are your statistics. Okay. No, it was very satisfying that, like I said, and someone else that finds your work appealing and wants to, and is passionate enough about you and your work to want to see it sold. You know, an agent has tons of clients, and if they're, and but they, even though they, you know, even though to other clients they say, oh, they have so many clients, it's really not a lot considering how many writers are out there. So to know that I was one of the people that were selected, that's a satisfying feeling. So yes, and we actually sold. Cuddle Bunnies did sell pretty soon after signing, so that was also equally satisfying. And to see your work out there.
So the Cuddle Bunnies is your fourth manuscript?
Fourth manuscript that I wrote, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. And the others are also a middle grade?
The others were all middle grade.
Wow. And you did, how come you didn't give up?
You know, the ones that get published are the ones that don't give up. You give up, you don't get published, you don't get anywhere. And you have to keep persevering. You have to believe in yourself. And this is, I say this on school visits, and it's true. It sounds cliche, but it is true. One, you can't give up. Two, you can never let anyone tell you that you're not good enough. You know, I do believe that some people, you know, have a natural gift that write better than others to start, but it is something that you can learn. It is something that if you practice and practice and practice, you can get better at. So you have to keep on trying and believing in yourself. As far as the stories themselves, I love horror, but I particularly love horror comedy. That's always been one of my, you know, passionate things. I love those type of movies. Like going back to a kid, I love, you know, Fright Night, Lost Boys, things like had the Nightmare on Elm Street that were funny and scary at the same time. So that's one of the things that always appealed to me. And so that's what I like writing about.
Okay, so let's talk about the Night of the Living Cuddle Bunny. I must tell you, you know, I'm like, my sweet spot is like picture books because I'm basically a 5-year-old.
Right. Yes.
But I did read this book, and it's, I loved it. I was amused and frightened at the same time. Where, you know, is there a wink here to the picture book, the kerfuffle or knuffuffle, the knuffle, a bunny, or it just happened?
No, nothing to that. It's really, it's the movies that I said that inspired me as a kid. It is a little bit, you know, the first two books, the sequel also, From Sunset Till Sunrise, has a lot, you know, Fright Night in it. This Night of the Living Cuddle Bunnies, of course, you know, the zombie movies or Gremlins, a lot, you know, Gremlins, totally a movie I love. It's just those funny, scary movies that really made it an impression on me. So there are a lot of references there. I put one of the characters there has a lot of references that only adults will get. You know, I figure if they're reading to their kids, that it works on two levels. One that a kid will get, but there are so many references that a kid will have no idea about. And I use that in the book too, like the references he makes. I have the lead character always like, who? You know, so I try to put it on different levels. If it's funny to me and appealing to me, I put it in there. And that's all that's important to me.
It's hilarious. I really, you know, to be frank with you, I can't really see parents reading it to their kids because it's middle grade. But I had a wonderful time reading it, and it's not my genre. And it starts out like any good, you know, horror story with these, you know, with the protagonist who wants a bunny, and it's a cute bunny at the beginning. And then it becomes not such a cute bunny in the continuation.
Evil, yes. So, but yes, no, like that's the things that I like. I do like, you know, it reminded me a little bit like, you know, of the thing like Child's Play or something, the cute doll that...
Exactly. Yeah. And so I'm thinking of it in terms of a Disney or, you know, Pixar something. Have you tried to sell it as a movie?
If they're listening, yes. But please contact Nicole Resinetti at the Seymour Agency for rights.
Absolutely.
But that's good. I always write with a movie in mind. Not meaning to that it necessarily is going to be sold as a movie, but I write picturing a movie like I'm watching it on the screen.
Okay. That by the way, that's how it reads.
Appreciate it. Thank you. That's how I write. That's why
you're trying. It's too bad that you already have an agent, because I could be your agent. Listen, I would be your agent, and I will sell you your own book. How's that?
Thank you. That sounds wonderful. I'd buy it. Yes.
Okay. And of course, your newer one, which is a kind of an anthology of bar mitzvah stories,
right,
and bat mitzvah stories, mm-hmm, b'nai mitzvah stories, and I have several questions about that. How did this come to happen?
Really, what I said there, I wanted to do something with Jewish themed stories. I think that's still, and probably shouldn't say it, but there's still a thing about Jewish stories. There's like, I've heard many times at conferences, and I've heard from agents even in the past, maybe it's lessening now, that, oh, we can't sell this, it's too Jewish. And, you know, that's really mind-boggling to hear. And you start, and I still think there's a problem with, you know, Jewish stories, not enough Jewish stories or Jewish content. And it doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, overly identifying a Jewish. To me, I want to see a Jewish kid. I want to see a Jewish kid in stories. And it doesn't have to be Holocaust stories, doesn't have to be this, just be in regular Jewish stories. So I wanted to see that. I wanted to get it out there so Jewish kids can see themselves. And I saw a lot of other anthologies out with other groups. So I wanted to do something. I wanted to have something for Jewish kids. So that's really how the impetus behind it. And then I started reaching out to other people. And more often than not, people said yes when I asked them and I told them what it was for. Very few turned down, but for the most part, it was an overwhelming majority yes. And to the point that, you know, there was only so many that you could take, and you want, you know, others. So maybe there'll be a follow up or something, but that's what really the impetus behind it, to show for Jewish kids to see themselves, and for non-Jewish kids to see that Jewish kids are pretty much the same as them, just different, you know, different belief system, but the same trials, the same tribulations, and the same things of, you know, at that age, you're dealing with a lot of the same issues.
Okay, so how did you pick the authors, and how did you like, you know, if you asked me to write a story, and then would you reject me if it wasn't a good story because the stories are good?
I reached the first one. Henry Hertz, who did the anthology with me. We started speaking to him about it. And so between us, we started getting the names. We started getting the names down. And again, you know, it was a lot of people I knew. That was the main way to, I wasn't looking for who's a big author, who's this, who's, it was just people I knew who I knew that would be passionate about this as well. Those are the first people that I reached out to, other Jewish authors who probably would. And like I said, they overwhelmingly got desire, and they were like, loved the idea behind it. So that was really how I worked out. There was no scheming or, you know, plotting to see, oh, whose name should be attached to this. Maybe I should have done that, but no. it was just really people who I knew who would also be behind it.
Okay. And did you say this has to be a real situation, a fiction?
I gave them no criteria for that. It was just that the only stipulation was that it had to be themed around a bar or bat mitzvah. That was it. We figured middle age, this is a perfect age, you know, bar mitzvah right there. That's it. It's right smack dab in the middle there. So that was the only thing, and they could do whatever. And you know, surprisingly, we got four sci-fi, you know, stories in there, which, you know, I told no one about that. So I thought everyone, when I did a sci-fi story, I thought I was going to be the only one. And surprisingly, three others did as well.
So there was no restrictions, you know, right?
No.
Whatever you want, true, fiction, sci-fi.
And you see a wide variety.
Fantasy. Yeah. Yep. And so how did you sell this?
Well, you know, my agent took it out. My agent shopped it. And, you know, Nicole and another agent at the Seymour agency, this is before I was an agent, so Lynette Novak, so they shopped it around. And Albert Whitman was passionate about it from the start. They jumped out right off, and they right away they said that they wanted this. So it's there was a really good feeling. So to have someone,
I've never seen anything like it. It's like it. I can't remember books that are, you know, fiction and nonfiction about bar mitzvahs.
It's, you know, yeah, that was the theme because of the middle aged grade, and I thought it was just like a fun theme. But it really was a passion project. That's really what I can say, and just to get the Jewish stories out.
Fantastic. So now let's go back to Jonathan, the agent. So okay. You taught, you were at Wall Street, you did all kinds of things.
Right.
You said you were a day trader.
I was, but that was from the comfort of my house.
Yeah, but you know, when we say Wall Street, you know.
I did it for myself, so mostly.
You didn't do it for the money.
Right, right. Well, yes, I did. That was exactly what I was doing it for.
I was a day trader to help society overcome and for global warming.
That was a long time ago. But yeah.
It's okay. I sold pianos. Come on, everybody did something.
The teaching, I was doing the teaching at the time. And but the agenting was after I was writing already. I was already kind of doing it, you know, recommending to people where they should go with their stories or what agents, and helping people to try to get something into shape. So it was like a natural progression in my mind. And really, again, it sounds made up, but it's really not. I give you my word, it's not. I wanted to become an agent also to help get stories that I wanted to see out there. I figured at least I have then some say in it. You know, I don't have the ultimate say, but I have some say, hey, I really love this story. I would like to help this come along and do what I can to see it published.
And is this what you're doing full time now?
I'm pretty much dove right in.
Should like, okay, so here, this is what I don't understand.
Yeah.
Okay. I am now committed to writing. I write, this is what I do. I write, everything else is a bit of, unless it's music, it's like.
I'm still doing writing, yes.
Okay. So you're still doing the writing.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody asked me to be an agent, okay, then that's a job.
True.
So how do you manage the time between agenting and writing?
It's, you know what? It's tougher now, for sure. It definitely is for sure tougher, but you have to plot your time out. You have to, you know, plan it and say, this is the hours that I'm going to do it. I keep terrible hours. I'm up very late at night, and that's the time that I'm writing. During the daytime is agenting time, and during the nighttime is my time to write. And that's really it. You know, I don't get as much time writing as I used to, obviously. And but I'm still doing it. I still make time for writing. I could be up till like 2 a.m. doing my writing. So that's
look,
when
you
I
know the nighttime is when the cattle bunnies come out. You know, this
exactly.
is the boogeyman time of day or night or not.
So
right,
that's it. You have to be disciplined. You have to find the time for yourself. And I will always find time for my writing, you know, no matter what is doing. My clients get my full attention during the day, and I do everything that I can for them. But at nighttime, that's, you know, that's me.
Oh, so yeah, in a sense, you're like a benevolent vampire.
Pretty much, yes. I'll use that, okay. Put that on my business card.
Oh, no, you can't. Okay, you can. So let's now go to agenting. Okay, so a lot of people that are watching and listening to the show. First of all, I'm going to recommend your books, The Cattle Bunnies, for anybody who loves this genre of funny, hilarious, but somewhat the horror, a middle age. I recommend it warmly.
Thank you.
I'm a big maven on it, but I really loved reading it. And of course, this beautiful B'nai Mitzvah book.
Coming of Age.
Which blew me away. Albert Whitman. Oh, we should mention the publisher of the first book. I forgot.
Sky Pony was the first book. This and the first couple of Sky from Sunset Till Sunrise and Night of the Living Cuddle Bunnies were through Sky Pony, which is Sky Horse now.
Well, you know, ponies grow into horses.
Yes, yes.
Or unicorns or something. So let's now talk about, because I have you right here where I want you, and you're an agent. And I interview people who have traditionally published books, you are now the gate person. You are at the gate. I know there's other gatekeepers. There's the editors, right, the publishing houses, and but you are the primary gatekeeper, and you turn away. It doesn't matter if it's 99% or 99.9%. And I feel, I interview the 0.1% that have the beautiful books, but I feel for the 99% who don't. And this is a chasm. And in picture books, you can't bridge it, because if you have a great manuscript but it's not being illustrated, then where are you in the world? Your comments, please, sir.
Look, you know, I've been on the other side, so I get it. It's tough. It's frustrating. And you hear the things, it only takes one person, which is true. It does only take one person. And you want someone that's going to be passionate about your work to begin with. You want to feel, when you're querying agents too, you also want to feel comfortable with the agent. You can't be with someone that you don't feel comfortable with. It's a relationship with. So you want that person really in your corner, passionate about you, passionate about your work. That's for one. And, you know, you got to say, keep trying. And if it's impossible for every agent, and I'm seeing it from the other side. Look, I get it from the author's side. I've been on both sides, so I can speak. So I can say all that. It's frustrating. It is frustrating. You're querying. And the most frustrating is when someone says, oh, this is great, but I'm going to pass. And I see that a lot now on the other side. I, you know, as an author, I see it. My agent shares me the feedback. And it's you want to pull your hair out. Oh, I love this. I love this. I love this. But I'm going to pass. So you get it.
You can tell that I've already pulled my hair out, right?
Okay. It's a frustrating business. For sure it is. But you have to keep trying. You have to look at the agents. You know, if you just keep sending into agent after agent without seeing what they're asking for one, that's what you want to see. What type of things? I get queries. I get some great queries that I unfortunately turned down. And there are reasons too. If I have someone who writes something similar, I don't want to take that other person because it's competing against each other. So I don't want that. If I have too many of one thing, I'll probably not take someone else in that type of genre. So there are other reasons or circumstances behind it. Sometimes they are telling you the truth, not saying that. Sometimes it's just not a hit. Sometimes you just don't connect with the material. I might hate something that you might love and vice versa. Everything's subjective. So you cannot take anything too personal. And if they do get feedback, they do offer some feedback, think about it. I'm not saying go ahead and change it, because sometimes, you know, the impulse is like, oh, this one told me to do this, I'm going to change it. The other person told me to do that, I'm going to put that into. And then by the end, you don't recognize your own work anymore. See if it fits with what you want to do in your story. And then you could make changes if you want, but listen to the feedback. I will say with agents, and I see with myself, I always thought that I was going to go personal each time. You don't have time now to start doing a personal thing for each one. You get inundated with queries. So it's usually like a quick look. This isn't for me. This is not for me. Or I want to see more of this. And, you know, maybe I'd like to see more.
You want to see more.
Right. So that's.
Oy vey.
So that's it. So that's the options that you have. But you cannot take it to heart. I do work on your query. I'm going to give that advice now. Work on your query. Send out your best work. Tailor it to each agent. I get something that's sometimes I get, dear agent. That's not to me. That's just a generic thing. That's not looking up specifically what I want. Or I get things that are nowhere in my, you know, my wish list. So that means you're not doing your research. And I've even gotten inquiries. This, you know, I'm sending you this page, but it really gets good on chat on page 3. So why is it starting here? Why are you sending me less than your best material? Work on your query, work, make sure that it's really the best shape that it can be before you send it to me or to any agent.
Okay. So just ask you now a few specific questions, because I'm not going to ask you how many clients you have, because that would not be nice. But of the clients that you've signed, how many met you at a meeting or knew you somehow, or you some had some faint association with, and how many came to you out of nowhere land?
It's a mix. It really is a mix. There, I took on some clients who I knew ahead of time, who I knew their work and, you know, loved their work or respected their work. And some just through the querying trenches that just emailed me and I did, you know, love what I saw.
So there's hope.
There's always hope. There's definitely always hope with me or with any agent. There's always hope. It, you know, that's why we read the queries. And okay. I promise I give a fair shot to every single one that comes in. But it has to grab me right away.
Okay. Do you think that the agents read, like, you're going to get, I don't know if this has happened to you, but you will end up getting between 2,000 and 7,000 queries a year.
When I first announced that I was an agent, I first announced I got a good portion of that right by the next day. So it was a good portion that came in. I'm still not quite. I just tweeted the other day actually about it, that because once it's double-edged sword, you want clients. So, you know, I have accumulated clients, but then you have to do work for clients and then I'd start not having as much time to go through queries. So it's that mix there. So I did tweet that the other day that I'm going to use this time now of the year to try to catch up and clear out all the queries. But yeah, it's tough. I still have over 1,000 queries in my inbox that I have to get down. You know, every time I think I'm making a dent, more come in. So I am going to try to get to them all over this before the end of the year. But yeah, a lot come in, and especially when a new agent announces, they get inundated right away.
I don't want to disappoint you, but I have a feeling that you're going to get more and more.
Sure I will. Look, I don't discourage. I haven't closed up shop yet. I know what number in my head, the number that I probably will.
Jonathan has closed the queries until 2034.
No, not yet. I'm not there yet. And look, I say that even if I get to that number that I'm going to be closed up, if something comes in that, like, hey, I love this, you find room for them too.
So basically, for people who want to query you, you are a terrific guy, I can tell. You have a backlog of 1,000 queries to look at. Right. So be patient. I once got a very lovely rejection after 2 years and 3 months from one of the best.
I hope it won't come to that. Yes.
From one of the best agents in the business, and we're still in touch.
I've heard stories like that too.
So for all the writers out there and the authors, don't lose faith.
Definitely don't lose faith.
But I'm going to say something, then you're going to correct me. When you query Jonathan, don't say this is really, really similar to another book that came out by somebody you're representing.
Well, it's right. Look, I do have specific likes and tastes. As we've talked during this back and forth now, you see some of the things that I do love. So, no,
but if I've written something that's exactly like somebody that you're representing, you're not going to.
I probably would not, just out of respect.
You're going to get answer number three, which is dear person.
My dear person. I also, you know, I've had the queries, if you help me translate this, this can be a bestseller. So yeah, that's probably not the best way to go about doing a query.
Dear householder.
Right. Yes.
Thank you for your submission. Right. Your manuscript is wonderful, but I'm representing someone who's written the exact
same thing.
Except she's using carrots instead of turnips.
Right. Yes. Yes.
But thank you very much. And I'm sure you'll have a wonderful career. I have to say that, the more I get to know the field, and I've interviewed about 60 authors, maybe more, illustrators, editors, publishers, and now I've started interviewing author agents. Mm-hmm. And you are wonderful. And you know, people.
I'm going to record that to tell my kids.
Hold on. I'm not finished yet.
Okay.
Because sometimes agents get a bad rap. And the reason they get a bad rap is because
comes with the territory.
Because they say no 99.9% of the time, but they have to. And when you submit to an agent, if you don't realize that they didn't necessarily ask to see your manuscript, you want them to see it, along with 1,000 other writers, you have to know that if they write you anything personal beyond happy Thanksgiving, that's meaningful. Correct me.
No, that's why I said it. You put a lot of effort into your query letter, for sure. It's the first introduction to you. You want it to stand out. You want it to be personalized. You want me to get a sense of who you are as a person and as a writer. If it's just a generic thing, you know, look, I'll still judge it by the writing, but it stands out even more if you've done your homework. I've had queries where people have done their homework and know a lot about me. They've included and the reasons why they're saying, and it does stand out more. I will pay more attention to those and say, this person's, you know, done what they're supposed to do. Let me give it, you know, due consideration.
Well, now all the thousands of people that are going to see this are here.
Right. Now we'll get a ton of like
you
that,
guys yes. know a lot about Jonathan.
Right. Yes.
You know, people are going to write to you in Spanish, and they're going to send you toy bunnies that they suspect do bad things at night.
I've had people try. I've had a query that did try to kind of like bribe a little bit too. It's just like if I get them published, they're going to get me either Met or Yankee tickets. One just assuming I was in New York, but and so I was
intrigued. And a flight from South Florida.
Right. Yes, I was intrigued by the Met tickets, but the Yankee tickets, you're barking up the wrong tree.
So everybody, bribe Jonathan, please.
Right, only right. Met not tickets, at all.
And include the round trip flight to
right,
Florida,
of course.
And the 3 nights in a mid Manhattan hotel.
I thought that was a new approach, but no. Right.
Well, so Jonathan, we're almost finished. Is there any question I haven't asked you? Because I'm going to pitch you now, not one of my stories. I'll do that later. but I have an idea.
Okay.
That I wasn't going to share, and now I'm going to share it. And you're the first agent in the world I'm sharing this idea with. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So if you want to speak at TED, right, what do? You write a few sentences about your topic, and then you record half a minute or a minute of you saying, you know, hi, my name is Jonathan Rosen, and I want to talk at TED about this and that. And they look at the video. So my idea is rather than pitch you a query letter, mm-hmm. which is like a 200-year-old way of introducing oneself, why not ask people to send in a half-minute video pitching their story? And then, you know, instead of reading 3 chapters of a book, you, in half a minute, you get a feel if you have some connection with this human being that you're going to represent.
I'll tell you right off, I don't think it would fly. And for me, for sure, it wouldn't, because I'd have to sit through 1,000 30-second videos. I can look at the query letter, and you start getting I skim to the relevant parts. And so I can go at my leisure. I wouldn't be able to sit there and have the patience to sit through, you know, 30 seconds of someone talking and to get to the points that I'm looking for. If I'm all possibly interested, I don't necessarily always take, but if I'm all interested, I will set up a Zoom call with someone to see if I can work with them, for one, if I get a sense of who they are. And because that's important to me. It's like, you know, life's too short if you can't work with a person, if your personalities don't mesh. So I
okay,
do get
so sense e- of them. E- e- even though you've thrown out my idea, I still love you in this interview. And this idea is going to come back to haunt you like the bunnies, because because
I'm already dreading opening my inbox after we're done now.
If I ever become an agent, this is what I would do. I would say, write a query letter. And if I like the query letter, have a half a minute thing. So I'll be able to see who you are and how you pitch. But that's just me.
I will, if I'm interested in someone, I will research them. For sure. I will check out their social media. I will check out to see if there are any red flags, for one. I will check out if they have a website to get a sense of who they are. But if there are any red, I've not taken people based on some social media things, and it's not politics. It's their persona. It's, I don't care who someone votes for, who someone backs. I really don't. But if they have a toxic persona, you know, to other people, it's not something I want to deal with. It's not something that I want to have to defend later on. Like, why is your author doing this? Like, oh, I don't know. Let me speak to them. So I do check out and see if it's someone first. That's the first step. And the second step, you know, the first step is the writing, but the second step is checking them out. And then third step is I will have a Zoom meet with them to see if I can get along with them first before we even get to the possibility of representing them.
That's incredible. You're the first, I've never heard this from an agent. That's wonderful. So this has also been a real revolutionary, revelationary interview. And so we're here to celebrate, first of all, your success as a writer. Yeah, we've talked about two books, The Night of the Living Cuddle Bunnies, as opposed to the ones that are gestorben. And your wonderful new book on the B'nai Mitzvahs, which both of these books are wonderful, and I highly recommend them. And I can only wish everybody in America a happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
And may your turkey be a signing with an agent like Jonathan.
Well, I hope not. They're dead.
I said the signing.
Well, the turkey's still dead, but yes.
One second. Doesn't the president
pardon? The president does pardon a turkey, but there's still
okay. So may okay. So may you, as a writer,
there we go.
The Thanksgiving turkey
from the president
that is pardoned by Jonathan Rosen. There's a story here, you know.
There is a story, sure.
The Night of the Living Thanksgiving Turkeys.
I said when I open up my inbox now, I'm going to see a dozen stories of that, of turkeys now. So,
at least a dozen.
Right. Yes.
Anything I haven't asked you?
I think we've covered it. And if you haven't asked it, I'm probably pretty safe that I'm happy that it hasn't been asked. So, yes. So I really think we'll let it go.
Okay. Betty, I hope you enjoyed the show.
I did. Thank you very much for having me.
So this is Mel Rosenberg, host of the Children's Literature Channel, the New Books Network. And I have had a really special guest for the special Thanksgiving week, Jonathan Rosen, author and newly agent. You should definitely consider querying him. He's a wonderful guy. Thank you very much.
Thank you.